Welcome to The Parenting Couch with Rachel Chappell and Sarah Levitt. Honest conversations about what parenting is really like. Because let's be real, it can be hard. Proudly brought to you by NorthshoreMums.com.au.
Hello and welcome to another episode of The Parenting Couch. I'm Rachel Chappell.
And I'm Sarah Levitt. And well, this episode, close to my heart for a number of reasons. As everybody knows, one thing I'm certainly very passionate about is children finding their way into adulthood in the best way and healthiest way that they can. So today we have, she's a teacher. That's absolutely what she is. And she started by actually at university learning about a school as she was doing her degree in teaching, and this particular school called Currumbina was in the embryonic stages, and she got to do prac teaching there and never left. That's over 40 years ago now that she has been an integral part. I mean, that's sort of playing it down a bit, but I'd like to make very welcome on to the Parenting Couch, Wendy Pettit.
Welcome.
Thank you very much, Sarah and Rachel. It's a delight to be here.
Now, this, I think, is the best way, and then I'll get you to elaborate more, Wendy, to describe Currumbina. I like this, and it's actually a quote by David Cohen, who's the founder of Currumbina originally. Learning in a cooperative environment in which decision-making and authority are shared. I love that. So if you could elaborate on that, that would be amazing.
Certainly. So briefly, historical detail, Currumbina was set up in 1969-1970, the height of the hippie years, I guess, and at the time there were a lot of schools being set up by parents and teachers and academics who wanted there to be an alternative to the systems that were available at the time. And of course, you know, there were, as I said, a lot of different schools, a lot of different methods, and very few of them have stood the test of time. Currumbina has been one of the lucky ones. And our founding fathers, David Cohen, that Sarah has mentioned among them, laid down some very basic principles that children should be respected as individuals, that they should be encouraged to cooperate rather than compete, that high academic standards should be aimed for alongside all of the social aspects of children's growth and development, and that the whole child should be always in view, and that a high level of cooperation happen also between teachers and parents so that there really is a community raising the children. The school is small. We have a preschool and we go up to the end of primary school. And basically, we make sure that children's voices are valued. So we have class meetings and school meetings on a weekly basis so that the children have the chance to raise issues that are important to them, and those issues are respected and listened to. The children know that the joint benefits, they learn that they have a right to speak and a right to be heard and know that they'll be taken seriously. Even if to the adult the issues might seem trivial, if they're important to the children, then they are valued. And the balance of that, of course, is that they also have a responsibility to listen to others and to respect other people's opinions. And so there's a strong emphasis on the growth of that sense of community, sense of mutual respect, using methods to resolve the inevitable conflicts based in words and effective communication. And as a student teacher of mine said many years ago, it's a place where you can be real. And in fact, you're encouraged to be real, adults and children alike. And so children can discover who they really are, and parents too, and teachers too. So really it's a learning community. Everybody is on personal journeys and everybody can contribute. The school is run by a board, which we call it a council, which is a group of elected parents and elected teachers. And they take a 2-year term on council and they basically make the major decisions about the school. And we're supported by administrative staff, of course. And at the moment we have 83 children in the primary section of the school, between kindergarten and year six, and another, 25 children a day in the preschool.
My kids are at a traditional school, and it's really interesting to hear about there are other options out there, what would you say would be the main differences on a day-to-day basis, a child that goes to the local public school versus a child that might go to Currumbina or another democratic school? Is it democratic? Is that the term that you use?
It is the term we use at the moment. I'll answer your first question first and then I'll talk about the word democratic. So the first thing that you'd notice is children don't wear uniforms. Probably the second thing you'd notice would be that children call adults and teachers by first names. Very relaxed atmosphere. We often have people sort of walk in the gate and say, oh, wow, this feels great, because they pick up the atmosphere of that there's fun and enjoyment. The kids have access to the classrooms all the time. They're not sort of locked out into the playground before and after school. And they very much have a sense of ownership of the school. And so, you know, if a visitor comes in, they're quite likely to say, well, you know, are you visiting the school? Can I help you? And ask who the visitor is, because generally everybody knows everybody. So it's a much more family, small community atmosphere. Inside the classrooms, the main differences are in the way adults talk to the children. They're very much engaged as equals, and there's, you know, discussion and chat and getting to know each other. And as well as that, of course, there's formal lessons, but there's also negotiation in terms of academics, as well as negotiation when needed to solve social issues. So I have children at the moment, for example, in my year 5-6 class, who absolutely have learned all their times tables and know them so well. And they've said to me, Wendy, I'm a bit over doing times tables practice for 10 minutes every week. I'd really like to do something else. And so they've negotiated with me that I provide something to extend them instead of revising times tables. And that's brilliant. I love it. They're absolutely in charge of their own education and telling me what they need. And I've got plenty of resources so I can satisfy that. So in terms of answering your first question, Rachel, those are probably the things that you'd notice. You'd notice more parents on site and parents engaging with teachers more as well if you were to walk in the gate before 9 o'clock or around about 9 o'clock on a school day. In terms of the word democratic, it's quite an interesting one. When the school first started, we were one of the alternative schools, and this back then in the 70s meant a hippie school, and the local community, you know, had a few things to say about that. They didn't want children running wild, and, you know, there was a bit of pushback, nothing that was actually, you know, any serious issues. And over the years, what we found is that all of the language that we tended to use for the school, so we went through alternative, we went through progressive, we went through child-centred, or terms that then were taken over by other schools. And, you know, I mean, every school now says that they're child-centred, for instance, but what they actually do is different from how we do it. We really do put the child at the centre of the educational process in terms of working out for each individual child what does that child really need in terms of education and their social needs as well. Our democratic model at Currumbina includes the students actually creating the school rules. And, of course, that means that the rules can in fact be changed, and it's important that they can be, because different populations of children at different times need to have a sense of ownership, and any rules that are handed down from above that the children have no say in just feel like an arbitrary authority, even though they were in fact created by children. So a current issue, for instance, is scootering. I've got a couple of kids, well, two in my class, and there's another couple in the younger years who are really avid scooter riders, and they're brilliant. They can do all these amazing tricks, and of course the school grounds have some places which are going to be safe and some places which are not. So yesterday we had to, these rules are written down, and some of us, including me, had one version of the rules, and then we looked up the list, and I was actually wrong. I had remembered incorrectly. And so we had to say, well, oh, okay, so here it is. And is this, you know, current school agreement going to work for all of us, or do we need to take it back to school meeting and revisit it? And the kids have looked at the rule and decided it works for them at the moment, and so they're happy to sit with it. But that rule could be taken back to school meeting, and the meeting will discuss all the issues involved. And, of course, the philosophy behind that is that children need to be given real ability to make decisions. They need to really be trusted in order to develop that capacity to be trustworthy. And it's only by having that real experience and, you know, sometimes making mistakes and having to learn from those mistakes that they really genuinely learn how to take responsibility for those things.
Yeah, and they're much more likely to follow the rules if they're creating them because they understand the rationale. Okay, well, maybe I'm not allowed a scooter in that area because it's high traffic and lots of people are coming in, or there's a few tree roots that are causing jumps or whatever it is, and they, you know, so they're more likely to actually understand the rules.
Yeah, absolutely so, Rachel. And, you know, they've been involved in the discussion, and if there's ever any difficulty, we can say to them, well, you know, hey, you were there at the discussion. You know what the reasons are. You know what's going on here. And you also know what you can do if you want to change it. It's a lesson in democratic processes, but it's also about having a sense of ownership.
My feeling is why people tend to stick to what they know, obviously, in terms of where they send their own children, you know, based on their own experiences. And I know, because I was a student at Currumbina as well, that there's a lot of fear. You know, there was a lot of derogatory comments made back in the 80s when I was there as well. I mean, I didn't care because I loved it. I mean, I didn't know any differently either, though. But obviously, I've sent my daughter there. So, of course, I am, you know, committed and I believe in the philosophy and everything it stands for. But I think a lot of people are scared, Wendy, and fear the unknown, which it is, and it's different. And I think that, would you say that that is the main thing that, you know, maybe stops people from?
I think that's a really, it is a really important thing, and it's sometimes really difficult for families. You know, if we have parents who are keen to send their children here, but the grandparents are saying, you know, what do you want to do that for? You know, the kids will run wild, they won't learn anything, blah, blah, blah. And it's very hard for people who haven't actually been in the classroom to know, to have any sense of what actually goes on. And it's difficult to educate them unless they're willing to really get involved and come in and see for themselves and ask all those questions. And, yes, of course, it's for parents, it's one of the big things. You want to do what you know, that, you know, if you've experienced a certain system, you're very likely to want your own children to go through the same system. And so, yeah, it takes courage for parents to choose Currumbina for their children, unless, of course, like Sarah, they've been here themselves. And we do have quite a number of parents who have now, these days, of course, been through Currumbina themselves and who choose to send their children here. And that's gorgeous, of course, it's lovely for us.
So, Wendy, what happens when the kids have finished primary school? Are there any equivalent high schools around the North Shore or in Sydney?
Great question. And of course, parents always want to know that too. The truth is, there isn't a high school that has, you know, exactly the same philosophy as ours. There is one public high school which is somewhat similar and has, you know, no uniforms. And I know quite a few high schools which are toying with reducing the uniform requirements and encouraging first name bases. There are different things happening within state education. Our year sixes tend to go on to a whole range of different high schools. So a lot of them go just into their local state school, into the state system. Some of them go to the selective schools. We often have children who choose to sit for the selective schools exam and then are accepted. We also have a fair number of children who go into the private system. And whatever system they go into, my take on it is that they really do have an advantage in the sense of their own awareness and of themselves as a learner, their self-awareness of their own skills and their ability and expectations of others in terms of communication. So they'll be the children who are able to speak out if they see injustice, for instance, or they'll be the ones who question if a teacher is not treating them fairly, or they'll be the ones to ask for something extra if they need it. Looking at the kids that I've taught over the years and the kids who keep in touch, there's a huge range of professions that they've gone into, and, you know, of course, the whole range of successes and not so great successes amongst them. And I think for my money, and my own three children went through Currumbina, of course, too, and so, you know, there's my personal perspective, is that if the children have that experience of being trusted and being able to learn those lessons about responsibility and communication before they get to sort of 12, 13, before they get into those teenage years, those lessons do in fact stay with them. And we have also had children come back and say, look, I really didn't realise how wonderful my Currumbina education was until I got to university. And I was the only one at uni who knew how to organise myself to get assignments in on time, or, you know, manage the, you know, the breadth of choice that was then available. We have, I saw just the other day, one of the kids who's gone to one of the, you know, very, very strict private schools in Sydney, just about to start year 12 content in year 11, and has really enjoyed it. And there's others at state schools who are doing really well. It's a wide variety. I would love to have an alternative high school in Sydney. And we've tried a number of times over the years. And in fact, for a very brief time, Currumbina had our own high school, but there were lots of difficulties with that and lots of problems in terms of, you know, geography, the site, and the we ended up having it on site, and we had very big then age range of kids on this site and too many people. Then the high school became a place for people who had really shocking experiences somewhere else, and there was a really difficult, you know, real need for lots of counselling and lots of extra things that they weren't able to provide because of financial restrictions. I do think New South Wales, which has been, in terms of its education department, very, very conservative for a lot of years, is opening up and beginning to be more flexible. And so maybe there will be the opportunity to set up a new school and do a K to 12, or, you know, start up, you know, 7 to 12. There are certainly high schools starting in other places. There's a new little alternative democratic school up in northern New South Wales in Murwillumbah, and they've started a high school. And there's one in Brisbane that was a primary school, Pine, that's also started a high school. And the ones in Victoria have high schools as well. So we are lagging behind in terms of in Sydney, but, you know, hopefully the day will come.
So, Wendy, does Currumbina have fees or is it government funded?
Currumbina is an independent school, and we do receive funding from both state and federal governments for our operations. And we're, you know, graded on the same levels as other private schools. And we do charge fees. We have a philosophy of keeping the fees as low as we can, but we do have to charge fees in order to cover costs. Most of our money gets, you know, put back into things that are going to benefit the children.
And just going back as well to talking about that trusting, and I know that in your particular classroom, Fridays, kids are allowed to go to the shops if they have done their work for the week. And I think that's such a beautiful one to set up for later in life, in understanding about meeting deadlines and having to be in the world and understand about consequences, obviously, as well. There's so much in that. I mean, I don't know when, I feel like that was there when I went there, Wendy. It's been around quite a long time.
Yeah, yeah. The children walking to the shops on a Friday to buy their lunch when they're in the oldest group has been a part of Currumbina for forever, I think. It's a really, as you say, Sarah, a wonderful way for children to be part of the local community, you know, going up to, you know, use the local shopping centre, but also to know how to manage their time and know that there are going to be consequences if things are not, in fact, completed. It's a much anticipated social event, walking up with a group of friends to buy their lunch, and there are lots of agreements around it. They have to make eye contact with me before they leave, and they have to wear their hat, you know, have to have a bag so they don't bring back more plastic. They, you know, there's all sorts of things that we talk about on a regular basis, and then they have to make eye contact with me when they get back, and we have discussions about what are healthy things to buy and what are not so healthy things to buy and all of that. But it's really a huge thing of trust. Our children, when they walk up the road, they have to walk past two other primary schools on their way to the shops. And there's been, over the years, there's been a certain amount of jealousy inspired comments from the other schools.
Yes, I remember. I remember the Kmart clothes as I used to go up to the shops, and it went on and on and on. And then I marched on in there and had a bit of a chat to the principal when I was about 11 years old. I was like, right, that's it. I've had enough. And I went, I want to see the principal of this school, and told them how I felt.
So the kids at the other school were heckling and saying, you're wearing Kmart clothes. Wow. You were like, I'm going to take matters into my own hands and sort it out with the principal. I love that.
In hindsight, of course, it was jealousy, but at the time I was just so offended and so protective of Currumbina. But these are some of the skills that I learnt being at the school. Like, I felt very confident in being able to do that. You know, I also have a mother who's very much like that as well, so I mean, that's probably a combination of both. But let's talk too about, as you just said, I think right at the beginning, that about the philosophy of the school not being pitted up against or competing. So there's no NAPLAN testing, Rachel, that goes on. So you sign, as a parent, you sign the form to say that you waive them of having to do testing. So how do you find with that then, Wendy, that why? I mean, what is that about?
The reality is that most teachers know where their children are from the work that they do with them every day. Just about everything that the children produce, every time they write, every time they speak, every time they, you know, they do some math. Any teacher that's doing a good job will be using that as evidence of learning and will be learning about the students, what levels they're at. A test is very unlikely to give you genuine information about that child's capacities. It needs to be a bigger picture. You can't just give a test on one day and use that to assess a child's learning. It needs to be broader, and there needs to be formative as well as summative. We tend to do some of both. I'll do ask children to do a particular task and I'll tell them, look, you know, I really want you to try hard on this one. You know, do your absolute best. This is something that I usually frame it as something I'm going to keep, and I'll use that as my record keeping. I still make my notes afterwards and think, okay, so these two children need to go back and because they haven't quite got that concept, and I'll need to follow up with that. And because we have a more flexible timetable, I can go and catch up with those two children who needed to have that particular concept re-explained, and I can follow through with them and say, look, would you mind just doing this with me for 5 minutes? Because I'm not sure that you understood blah, blah, blah. And we have time to go over that on a small scale, in a small group way. You know, there's nothing threatening. You know, they haven't got big crosses on something, but I know what they need to follow up and have the time to do it. There's no need, I don't think, for NAPLAN testing. And of course, you know, these days lots of people are withdrawing their children from NAPLAN, acknowledging that really it's not a brilliantly effective tool. It suits government purposes, of course, to have that sort of data. I can understand why governments want it, but I don't think it particularly serves the children. Myself. There are schools in our sort of democratic education group who do NAPLAN, and they are a couple in Victoria that I can think of, and they just treat it as, oh yeah, we're going to do this and it's not a big deal. Currumbina's always chosen not to do it. We do have small classes too, so that it's possible for teachers to know their kids really well and to have the time to spend with them. It makes a huge difference, I think. Much more important to follow up and, you know, reteach if somebody hasn't understood something than to just test it and then put the tests in a box.
Does Currumbina follow the same curriculum as other primary schools?
So we do, of course, follow the New South Wales curriculum guidelines in all of the key learning areas. And what we do is add on to that and also do it in our own ways. So basic maths and English, of course, we cover the topics that we need to cover. And especially in English, we can, you know, use texts that the children have input in choosing, to especially at my level, using texts that they are interested in. We can also, in areas like history and geography and science, we can ask the children what they're interested in and use those to explore the concepts and the principles that are needed to be covered. And our job as teachers is to make sure that we, you know, cover all the things that are necessary. Of course, we don't want the kids to go off to high school not knowing things that they need to know, but we can also add in more choice for them. So one thing that's really important to Currumbina kids are their personal interest projects, their PIP, and every child from about year two onwards does a free choice topic personal interest research project every term. They start off as, you know, really gorgeous posters and pictures stuck on and some words about, you know, an animal they might have wanted to learn about or whatever. When we get to my year five sixes, for instance, I have one child in my class this term doing a research project on the immune system in the human body and getting very excited about finding a book on immunology at the library on Monday. And another one who's doing the history of music and discovered it was a bit huge and realized I just want to do the history of rock and roll music, which is wonderful. And then towards the end of the term, each of the kids has 8 minutes actually to present their project to the group. And most of them do that using Google Slides these days. Used to be posters or book. The internet is the thing. They speak to the group and they answer questions on their topic. And it's a wonderful way for them to learn a massive number of skills in research and summarizing and analyzing information, creating bibliographies, using Google Slides to put the whole thing together into a coherent presentation.
You know what, I think one of the things is, you know, and it is fascinating, and despite knowing about it, I continue listening for hours because I love it. You know, one of the things I remember we sat around recently, you know, when our kids were just at the beginning of every year, the teachers will have you in you know, and everyone goes around and talks about their story and how they've ended up at the school. Somebody else in the group who I actually was at the school with as well explained it like this, and I feel like it, I hadn't thought about it like this before, but they didn't remember actually sitting in a classroom and sort of learning. It just happened. It just happens in this. It's almost like magic, right, at the end. And that's the thing. And the interesting thing is when I went on to high school, and you said that about high school, Rachel, and it is a good question because it's tricky. I was lucky. I did go to a high school that was actually the most similar one that probably ever has existed. And sadly, it's no longer around. I felt so ready when I went to high school. Like, because there's no homework at Currumbina, which hasn't been mentioned either. And so I was ready for homework and to have diaries and to be organized. I mean, it was still overwhelming. There's no question, you know, moving around to different classrooms and different teachers, and it's a bigger environment and new people. But I felt ready. And another thing I've heard in the past as well is that because of the foundation that it gives you, not just, as Wendy said, about academics, but about skills for life. And I think that that is what carried me, because I actually wasn't, I mean, Wendy tutored me in maths, so I wasn't ever, that wasn't my thing. You know, that's like, I had to work really hard for that, strain my brain, still does a bit. But the point was that because of having the skills of self-discipline and organisation and these other things that got promoted, and then I had those, I was still able to do really well through my high school years as a student, even though I wasn't necessarily exceptionally academic, because I had those other skills going, you know, for me. And I still got 50 diaries going, and, you know, it's fairly self-disciplined. It's just interesting the way, and I definitely feel like you come out. Yeah, it's like, it's because so much of the learning is done in a different way and through play, even, especially in the first few years too. You don't realize you're learning. Grateful for your time, Wendy.
My pleasure. Thank you again for having me here.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us on the Parenting Couch podcast. It's another enlightening episode, and we've got plenty more of them in the archives, so be sure to head back in. Lots of amazing guests that we've interviewed over the last year, so lots of great content for you. And if you never want to miss another episode, hit follow or subscribe or whatever that button is below our show, and you'll get notified whenever a new episode drops, which is every second Wednesday.
At 4 a.m. for those that are up and about.
If you're up walking or exercising at 4 a.m., you know that there is going to be a new episode on a Wednesday morning.
And I salute you. So it's not something I'm doing at the moment. I'm cold in the middle of the day. Also, too, you know what would be really helpful? If you could take a sec and write a review for us, which is always available on the, you know, platforms where you like to listen to your podcast and to our episodes, because it always helps, obviously helps other people to, you know, just say, oh, okay, that's what the show's about, that's what they do. It can only help us to continue to keep doing this. So that'd be really amazing if you could go on and do that. Thank you very much.
We would love you. We would be very grateful.
Awesome. So thank you again for tuning in, and we'll catch you next time.
See you next time. Bye.